Oleg Timofeyev was born in Moscow and earned his doctorate in music from Duke University. He's been pioneering the revival of the Russian seven-string guitar and its repertory for many years. Lives in Iowa City, but tours the world. Oleg, it's so good to have you back on the air.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
And Vadim Kolpakov was also born in Russia, in a family of leading Roma or Gypsy musicians. From the age of 15, he was a lead musician of Moscow's Roma Theater, Theater Roman, where he was a guitarist, lead guitarist, composer, vocalist, dancer, actor. To this day, his guitar compositions are performed in prominent plays at that theater. Well, he is here in Iowa and in our studios. Vadim, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Barney. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wanted to mention that Vadim reached a particularly large audience through his work with Eugene Hutz of Gogol Bordello. They recorded a CD of Roma activist songs, and they performed at Madonna's 49th birthday party and toured with Madonna. Well, Vadim, you have now reached the real big time, Iowa Public Radio. Thanks for being here. I wanted to mention the two of you will be performing Wednesday at the Papa John Business Building, room W401, and it's free, open to the public. And the title is a very interesting, Dostoevsky, Jews and Gypsies. Oleg, could you tell us about this?
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually not the first time we're doing it. We thought of this project in 2005 and performed it in March of 2005. That was our first experience with it. And then Vadim put it in Charlotte. So I traveled there and we had the same show. The idea of the show is the following. It's built on a chapter from Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky. And there is a moment when Mitka, who is one of the brothers and who wants a big party, he comes and says, the most important question, are gypsies there? Can we get gypsies, meaning Roma musicians? And he gets a response, well, actually, we don't have gypsies anymore. They had to leave, but you know, because of problems with authorities, but we have what he calls zhytki, a very bad word for Jews. So basically what they had was a klezmer band, and Dostoevsky, who has a reputation of an anti-Semitic Russian writer, he actually gives quite a few details, rather neutral. It's not like he comments on their quality of music or quality of personalities, but he basically, all of the dramatic events on this chapter, the name of which is Delirium, is happening to the tune of a klezmer band and a Russian folk choir, because they wake up the so-called devki, or the maidens of the village, and they sing a cappella, probably they sing songs. And some of those songs Dostoevsky even gives us the lyrics for, and they don't exist anywhere else. They're not genuine Russian songs. They're actually songs that Dostoevsky made up. So that's what we put on stage, you know, in 2005, you know, before all of those global financial crises. You know, we had better situation, so we actually got some grant money and we commissioned some music from composers, and we basically tried to make a show out of three distinctive components: Russian folk choir, basically female folk choir, gypsy instrumental band, and a klezmer band.
And this show on Wednesday will bring us some of that, or
we will try to make a miniature version of it. We don't have the same resources anymore, and we had a terrific, phenomenal, you know, klezmer clarinet player in 2005 who died the same year, unfortunately. You know, it's a great loss, Robert Paredes. So now we don't have him, but we are inviting people from Davenport, the so-called Hot Club of Davenport, and they will be impersonating the Jews, playing, you know, klezmer music, which is not exactly what they usually play, because they do more of the so-called gypsy jazz. But basically, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And there will also be fragments of this chapter read, so it all will supposed to make a little bit of sense. But not too much, because it's supposed to be crazy, too.
Well, I'm going to ask you more about this, but maybe we could ask for a little music right now.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I would like just to introduce the Russian guitar.
Please.
You know, Russian guitar has seven strings. And the revival of it was very interesting because not many people knew that it started in Russia during the age of Catherine the Great in the late 18th century. And at that time, you know, first of all, music in major keys was very common, you know, 18th century. And so that's maybe why the guitar is tuned in major. But most of music that is really remarkable is in dark minor keys. And I'm going to play one of the first pieces written for this. It's not from our show, and it's not really a gypsy tune, but maybe you can hear something something very exotic about it anyway. It's a Polonaise Melancolique by Ignaz von Held. This was a Polonaise Melancolique by Ignaz von Held, a composer who arguably was the first composer for the Russian guitar, who was born in 1766 and worked in Russia, even though he was not Russian, but he was Czech.
And Oleg, as I heard that, I mean, Polonaise means Polish dance, but to me that really sounded Russian. What is the Russian style that developed?
It's hard to, one thing about Russian style in guitar music is a lot of legato. I mean, in Spanish guitar music, like a passage like would have been, every note would have been articulated. And in Russian guitar music, it's sort of more relying on the singing style. And it started very early. So this is very early, very beginning of the 19th century. And that's when this piece was published. And at that time, the Russian guitar was becoming a popular instrument in Russia because it was just invented by the Czechs and Poles. But the other thing that was becoming very interesting, very popular, was the Romani choirs, and the Romani musicians, the what we call commonly gypsy musicians, they were using the same seven-string guitar, and they kept developing interesting things to it. And so they were side by side with classical composers who actually used their styles. So I think the best thing would be if Vadim shows now the style of music of a Romani Russian seven-string guitar performance that he kind of inhaled, that he learned from his uncle and he learned from the family tradition.
That would be fantastic. Well, Vadim, what do you have for us?
Yes, Barney, I have one piece that I would like to introduce to the public. It's composed by my uncle. It's called Fantasy. And my uncle is, my teacher and my mentor, who is one of the greatest Romani seven-string guitar players in the world, Alexander Kolpakov. So that's a composition that I would like to play for you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Vadim Kolpakov performing a composition by his uncle, Alexander Kolpakov, a legendary virtuoso Russian seven-string guitarist. And Vadim has performed at Carnegie Hall and the Kremlin and the Kennedy Center and many other very major venues. And right now he is in our studios in Iowa City telling us, along with Oleg Timofeyev, about the concert they're giving on Wednesday. That was beautiful, Vadim. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that we've heard an early Russian guitar piece and a recent gypsy. Well, I wanted to ask you, Vadim, before we go on to my next question, is what this tells me is that the Russian Roma musical tradition is something that's really very much alive and very much a sort of a vital living tradition of which you are part. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, Romani gypsy musical tradition came from like late 18th century, I would say. And at that time, during the Tsar's time, that was like most of it was Romani choirs, as Oleg mentioned. And they adapted, you know, the Russian seven-string guitar in Russia. But in Spain, for example, maybe not many people know that style of music from Spain as flamenco that was created by Romani people in the 16th century in Spain, or like gypsy jazz, what we call like a Manouche music, like by Django Reinhardt. I'm sure that you heard about this, right, Bernie?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that's one of the styles of gypsy music from France. So basically, there's like different kinds of Romani musics around the world that Romani musicians created when they, you know, they came to this country, for example, like to France or Spain or Russia. And in Russia, what's happened actually? They at the beginning they started to play music of Russia, like, you know, Russian folk songs, and create their own style with this music. And so that's, you know, the one of the styles that became popular as a Tsigansky romance in Russian, means like Romani romance, which is like lyrical kind of songs about love and, you know, something like that. So that's basically, you know, of why the Russian Romani music became popular in Russia, you know, until these days.
Well, if I can add a little, you know, Russia has been, I mean, we have a lot of ethnic tensions, I mean, we had in the past, but Russia seems to be the country where the Romani people feel the best. You know, right now in the world, there are many problems for facing Romani people in Eastern and Western Europe. And in Russia, you know, we find that there is a lot of adoration for the gypsy music, you know, and a lot of Russian noblemen, like, for example, the very well-known Count Tolstoy, the namesake of Leo Tolstoy. He was known Tolstoy the American because at some point he undertook a long journey by sea. He married a Romani singer, and it was not uncommon because so much admiration you read in the books, you know, of Leo Tolstoy, of Nikolai Leskov, Pushkin, everywhere you find glorious references to the wonderful Romani musicians, amazing people, you know, and that sort of that became part of the culture. Now, when you look at other literatures, for example, you know, in Czech literature, you find a completely different picture.
Huh. Very interesting. And yes, as you say, there have been quite a few headlines this year from as far west as Ireland about various problems that the Roma population is experiencing. I wanted to ask, I'm going to ask about the intersection of Russian and Roman and Roma music, but one question before then for Vadim. You did a tour with Roma musicians from Romania, Spain, India, Hungary, and Bulgaria, a tour of many countries. Do you find, surely there are both differences and commonalities. What's your sense of Is there anything that's sort of a common thread running through Roma music?
Yeah, I think since, you know, Romani people came from India about 1,000 years ago, and as I mentioned before, since they traveled, you know, from India to all other parts in the world, they kind of came with their own music that they had, but they mixed it up with the, you know, regional music that was there in that country. So I think I'm sorry, I think that's one of the main kind of point that they have came from India, and there is some roots in that culture, you know, from Indian culture. And you know that's I think that's one of the
One of the most fundamental principles could be that Romani musicians around the world usually rely a lot on improvisation and don't read music like classical musicians. They can read music fine, but they wouldn't do that in concert. It's not kind of a thing when you write out who plays what and they play it, but instead they rely on a set of improvisatory patterns, formulas that is the part of their musical education. And that musical education in different countries could be completely different. For example, in former Yugoslavia, there are communities of Muslim Roma, and their music mainly sort of woodwind instruments or bagpipes, and it's just very different from the Russian Roma who play basically seven-string guitar and a little bit of violin. But the same improvisatory approach to music. But I also, talk to Romani scholars who, being both of Romani origin and studied ethnomusicology, and they were denying such concept of gypsy music, saying that there is only such thing as gypsy style.
Interesting.
But that's just a point of view, of course.
Okay. Well, I was going to ask one further question. I'm hoping to hear some more music shortly, but the intersection between 19th century Russian guitar music and Roma style music, examples of interactions that you hear? Or?
Yeah, I think I can try to illustrate it with another solo piece, and then we can show something together.
Okay, great.
The solo piece is by Mikhail Vysotsky. So Mikhail Vysotsky belonged to the one could say somewhat lower social stratum, because he was a serf by origin, but he became manumitted. So Russian serfdom ended about the same time as American slavery. And it was just as problematic in terms of, it didn't end right away. Instead, it was dragging on in many forms of exploitation. But Vysotsky was his landlord, Hiraska, was a very liberal person by his time, and wrote a lot of poetry. And so basically for Vysotsky, it wasn't that difficult to join the civilized society of Moscow of the 1820s, 1830s. And there he spent a lot of time with the Roma. And when he died very prematurely in 1837, like barely 40 years of age, a lot of Roma musicians showed up at his funeral, according to the reports. Some of them were taking lessons from him because he was so resourceful and invented things on the guitar. On the other hand, he clearly used some interesting passages that imitate the singing that was, common at that time. So this is a variation on the folk song by Vysotsky. I will try to play as much as I can.
Here's Oleg Timofeev. Timofeev. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that we recorded CD with Oleg and our ensemble in 2005, and CD called Mikhail Vysotsky and the Gypsies of Moscow. So that's basically about this crossover between Romani music and Russian kind of classical music style. So, and we might play one piece, Заречкой, Maybe.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Why don't we try?
That's one of the recordings. If you would like to hear more, Barney, we can play one more piece.
That would be fabulous. Yes.
So that's going to be like two guitars and our arrangement of Michal Vysotsky song.
Timofeyev and Vadim Kolpakov. You played beautifully, the two of you. And
Thank you.
An example of what people will be able to hear on Wednesday at 5 at the Papa John Business Building, room W401, downtown Iowa City. Thank you both so much for coming and performing for us. Oleg, you are going to be teaching about this topic at the University of Iowa. Am I correct?
Yes. Actually, I taught this course on Romani cultures twice before. In the previous year, this year, this course is going to be offered through comparative literature. Interesting, you know, a lot of people are curious about gypsies, about Roma. You know, among the students, I always encountered, you know, dreamy females who you would like to dress in long skirts and sort of even look gypsy. But I have to say that in America, you know, there's a book about the Romani people called The Invisible Americans, because very few students, before they take this course, unless they're from Eastern Europe, very few of them realize that Romani are a nationality. And people assume that gypsies are, you know, like those people on motorcycles. And they're also very confusing shows in popular culture and on TV, kind of giving wrong ideas. You know, people are filled with ignorance and prejudice. And therefore, I find that teaching this course is more than just a pleasure. It's a kind of an educational mission in a way, because people should learn about the Romani people, about the Romani nation, should learn about their origin, should learn about Romani Holocaust that is very obscure. It was extremely late than America actually acknowledged the Romani Holocaust. And, you know, it was Europe a little earlier, but still, you know.
The Romani Holocaust that Hitler killed something like a quarter of the world's Romani.
Exactly. So that's the little known Holocaust. And also the slavery, like in the Eastern Europe and Romania and Transylvania, everybody born Romani was automatically a slave. And what I already mentioned, Russian serfdom and American slavery and Romani slavery in Eastern Europe, they all ended exactly the same time. It's quite, I mean, on paper.
Well, when you say slavery, by the way, Romani slavery, I see that that is a way of describing serfdom. Was there actual slavery as well?
Yeah, very close.
Well, it is really very timely, as you say. It's in the headlines quite a lot these days. So thank you very much for telling us about this. I guess we can go out maybe with a track from a CD you made of a tribute, early music of Russian gypsies. Could you tell us about this, Oleg?
Yeah, this was our first experiment. I had Fulbright in Moscow, and that's when I met Vadim and his uncle. And, you know, it's one of those experiences, you know, life-changing kind of meetings when I came to a concert at a house, at an apartment of a friend of mine. You know, I didn't expect much, even though I heard them before. But I was completely fascinated by the, you know, this incredibly charismatic couple of uncle and nephew, and I thought that we should that we should do something together. But of course, it was very difficult to imagine what can we do. And we found, I mean, by that's a royal we, of course. I found a story that fit our forces very well, because it was a story of a Romani performer who died in 1822, and in her necrologue, there was a very detailed description of what her repertoire was. And apparently, even though she was a native Romani performer and improviser and so on, she also performed bel canto arias. And our forces were Anne Harley, a Canadian soprano with whom I recorded two CDs before that, and Etienne Abelin, you know, Swiss baroque violinist. So we had this crossover project with three classical musicians and three Romani musicians. Romani musicians were Vadim, his uncle Alexander Kolpakov, and the beautiful singer Tamara Cheripovska. But in the track that you're going to play now, we're just at the very beginning, we're trying to present this improvisatory atmosphere as music is born before our eyes, you know, from nothing. So as if we're tuning. And then what we play is the tune that Vadim's uncle wrote. It's called Khlebnitke, which I think means a dance tune. Yeah.
So this is a track in which we will hear Vadim Kolpakov with his uncle, whom we've been speaking of, the legendary Alexander Kolpakov, and Oleg Timofeyev, this dance tune. I want to thank both of you so much for coming into our studio.
Thank you so much, Barney.
Great pleasure, as always.
Pleasure,
thank you so much.
To be with you, and I hope to see you at our show sometime. And I hope everybody in Iowa right now, know something from what we say, learn something new. So thank you so much.